Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Starseed Radio Academy, empowering Starseed to better serve the planet.
Welcome to Starseed Radio Academy. It's Tuesday, May 6, 2014, and I'm your host, Arielle Taylor, with my co-hosts, Lavendar and Anastasia. Since we'll be going to Arkansas next week for our May Crystal Quest, we'll be gone for the next two Tuesdays, so take a look in our show archives for any episodes you may have missed. There's a lot from Lavendar's Vault available on demand anytime you'd like. And last week, we announced our next quest, which is September 21 through 27, and we already have reservations for fall. So if you have 25, 26, or 27 degrees in any of these signs, Taurus, Scorpio, Cancer, Capricorn, Aquarius, or Leo, you do have the rites of passage to participate. Just send an email to crystals@starseedhotline.com for more details. And after tonight, our next show will be on May 27th. In the first half of our show tonight, our guest is Jim Gerard, who is an award-winning artist, poet, composer, and now author of a book he wrote about his invention of a new form of divination, which he calls the Dice Code Divination. He's had some astonishing results after years of refining his technique, and he's here to tell us about how it works. He conducts free classes and helps with interpretations and offers this method so that anyone with or without developed psychic ability can tune into their own original blueprint. In the second half of the show, I'll be presenting some manifestation techniques that help you master the law of attraction to create anything you desire in your life, whether it's financial prosperity or some other state of abundance. At the top of the show, it's the Starseed News segment with Anastasia, bringing topics of interest to Starseed and sharing some emails from our listeners. We'd like to thank Claudia for hosting the switchboard this evening, and you can call in with questions or comments on 917-889-8292. And make sure you press 1 so we know you want to come on the air. We also have an online Starseed community at starseedhotline.ning.com. And special thanks to Tammy for her dedication to the forum. Starseed Hotline's toll-free number is 888-881-0881. The Stage 1 Starseed confirmations are based on Lavendar's discovery of star markings in your natal astrological chart. And the Stage 2 session is a one-on-one phone session available with Lavendar, Anastasia, or myself. Remote healing sessions for people and pets are also available with Tammy. And if you have a birthday coming up, you can find out how to make the most of your 10 hours of power by requesting your solar return timing. So this evening, I would like to introduce Anastasia first. Hello, Anastasia.
Good evening, Arielle. Good evening, Starseed. I hope everybody is doing great today. And it's good to be with you tonight. And did you notice I didn't have any difficulty with my technology today? I got
Yay.
The new equipment. So we fixed the broken parts and we're ready to go. So we'll start off tonight's Starseed News by talking about the skies. Tonight, a meteor shower is peaking. Halley's Comet, that dusty debris from Halley's Comet anyway, called the Eta Aquarid meteor shower, is going to peak tonight. So that's a good time to get out and watch the stars. If you have clear skies, it should be a beautiful night to watch for the falling meteors. Not much happening in the way of news about the sun today, but I do want to pass along a story about Stephen Hawking, the famous physicist. Stephen Hawking has co-written a dire warning to the human race about the danger of unintended consequences from our current fascination with artificial intelligence. In an open letter with three other scientists that was published in The Independent, Stephen Hawking contended that dismissing the notion of highly intelligent machines as science fiction could be our worst mistake in history. Now, we use artificial intelligence every day, from our iPhone's personal assistant Siri and Google Now and other programs, and then they plan to build self-driving cars, and so many other new impending inventions are predicted to become capable of using artificial intelligence to solve all of our problems for us. Well, Hawking has to say that the potential benefits are huge, but he warned that developments do not come without danger, because defense companies right now are actually exploring the use of fully autonomous weapons, don't need people behind them, that they're going to send into the field to track and kill specific targets. So Hawking said, quote, looking further ahead, there are no fundamental limits to what can be achieved. There is no physical law precluding particles from being organized in ways that perform even more advanced computations than the arrangements of particles in human brains. He means that our creations would learn to think, program, and modify themselves faster and faster and faster, which would make possible an explosive transition in which machines with superhuman intelligence could repeatedly improve their design even further, triggering a singularity event. And he further warned that although we are facing potentially the best or worst thing to happen to humanity in history, little serious research is devoted to any of these issues. All of us should ask ourselves what we can do now to improve the chances of reaping the benefits and avoiding the risks. So wise words from Stephen Hawking. And in the Northern Mariana Islands, there is a new underwater eruption. Seismometers on the Northern Mariana Islands record high levels of seismicity from an undersea volcano near the island of Farala. Oops, hold on, guys. I got to look at this. Farallon de Parajos. Farallon de Parajos. That's kind of a pretty name. But the seismic signals almost certainly herald an eruption, scientists are telling us. Underwater explosions and shockwaves have been heard and felt by scuba divers, and even one of the most powerful ones went through the hull of a NOAA-based ship, National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, one of their ships, making the crew think that something had happened to the ship, so it reverberated through the hull of their ship. It was so powerful. Shipboard personnel also reported a large sulfur slick on the southeast coastline of this island. So scientists are watching this very carefully. A lot of volcanic activity under the Northern Mariana Islands. And in the Fiji Islands, on Sunday, there was a magnitude 6.6 earthquake. And today, this morning, there was a 6.3 magnitude earthquake in Thailand. So that was in northern Thailand. It damaged roads, buildings, and even stopped prayers in Buddhist temples. There were no casualties reported, but there have been a number of record-breaking earthquakes last month in April. They say that April produced a higher than normal number of the major seismic events, and according to the Pacific Tsunami Warning Center, which is the outfit that issues alerts for tsunamis, there were 13 major earthquakes in April. Five were higher than 7.8, which prompted tsunami warnings. Now, what's interesting about all of this is that the Earth was really calm up until April 1st, when that huge 8.2 magnitude earthquake rocked northern Chile. Well, from there, another earthquake hit the Solomon Islands in the South Pacific, and then earthquake activity continued all month. But there were many, many other quakes that were not a part of the two major clusters that I just talked about. There were isolated, larger-than-normal quakes all over the world last month, in Nicaragua, Mexico, Canada, and even an unusual one in the South Atlantic. Very unusual. Well, they're asking, is fracking the cause? Now, according to Columbia University scientists, powerful earthquakes can trigger swarms of minor earthquakes near wastewater injection wells, like those used in oil and gas recovery. They say a recent surge in U.S. oil and gas production using vast amounts of water to crack open rocks and release natural shale gas has been linked to an increase in small to moderately induced earthquakes in five states. Three quakes, occurred in Oklahoma, Colorado, and Texas that were triggered at injection well sites by a major earthquake a long distance away. So they're beginning to acknowledge and recognize the interconnectedness of all of this activity along with the Earth's fault lines. And as an additional related story, a rare earthquake warning has been issued for Oklahoma. This is unheard of. the major increase in earthquakes caused this rare earthquake warning to be issued from the USGS and the Oklahoma Geological Survey just yesterday. In a joint statement, the agency said the risk of a damaging earthquake, one larger than magnitude 5.0, has significantly increased in central Oklahoma. Now, the rate of earthquakes in Oklahoma outpaced that of even California for the first few months of 2014. Now, I've been seeing that, excuse me, as I do research for the news. Well, they say that the number of quakes magnitude 3.0 and stronger jumped by 50% in the past 8 months in Oklahoma, and some 183 earthquakes of magnitude 3 or greater happened in the last 14 months. Now, the state's long-term average for the last 30 years, from 1998 to 2008, was only 2 earthquakes per year, so magnitude 3.0. So it's just been a huge jump, and they have issued this warning because they don't know what's going to happen next. And speaking of Oklahoma, we've had a lot of news about Oklahoma in the last few months. But there has been a deadly wildfire. It burned down some homes and caused mass evacuations. And this is from yesterday's news. I don't have an update for today. But it started as a controlled burn near Guthrie, Oklahoma, and erupted into this massive wildfire that caused a lot of damage. I guess it burned 3,500 acres of land. And there was also a wildfire in Los Angeles, or near Los Angeles. It forced the evacuation of more than 1,600 homes last week. Powerful winds made it very strong, and they couldn't stop it. It first initially began in the San Bernardino National Forest, so I haven't had an update on that. I don't know if that's under control yet or not, but that is what happened last week and into the first part of this week. And there's been a fascinating story about a shipwreck. Wow. They found more than 60 pounds of gold that they recovered from this 157-year-old shipwreck off the coast of South Carolina last month. It's 7,200 feet down under the ocean, and it's been discovered by a deep-sea exploration company that announced, I guess it was today, that there's a lot more gold down there. I mean a lot more gold. Now, this ship has a very interesting history. And I'll tell you about that in a minute. But this exploration company had to use a robot because it's down so far under the water. And they got nearly 1,000 ounces of gold on their first reconnaissance drive. Now, the name of the ship was the SS Central America. People have tried to get down to it before, but they couldn't because it was so deep. Well, this was a 280-foot wooden steamship that was on its way to New York from San Francisco. And it carried as many as 21 tons of gold ingots from the California Gold Rush, and it sank in a hurricane in 1857. So what they found so far, they say, is 5 gold ingots and 2 $20 double eagle coins that are worth $1.2 million. They say the remaining treasure is worth about $85 million. And according to the New York Times, that doesn't include a cargo long rumored to be aboard the wreck, a secret cargo, 15 tons of Army bullion. So that's pretty interesting stuff, really exciting.
Wow.
For those people. They're up to their shoulders in gold. And from South America, we've got a very interesting news story about the lines, I was going to say Nazca lines, but actually these are newly discovered rock lines that have been found about 125 miles out of Lima, Peru. And these lines predate the famous Nazca lines by centuries. They were created by the people of the Paracas, a civilization that they say came into being around 800 BC. Now, the Nazca culture, on the other hand, they say evolved around 100 BC. And we know that the Nazca is famous for their Nazca lines, or those geoglyphs that were built in the shapes of monkeys and animals and birds and things like that. Well, these newly discovered lines are older. They dated them about 200 years older than the Nazca lines. And the Kotzen Institute of Archaeology at the University of California, Los Angeles, reported this find yesterday in the journal From the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. Now, experts are telling us that these people, the Paracans, use the lines in a different way than the NASCA. Now, I'm going to interject here with an editorial comment. They really don't have any idea of knowing what this is about, but this is what they say the lines were used for, okay? So I'm just telling you, I'm reporting this. But experts say that the people created these lines as signs, like we would make neon signs. They believe that these were signposts to bring visitors from far and wide to special celebrations, specifically fairs. You know, like in Europe, there would have been medieval fairs. Well, that's what they're saying anyway. And they discovered these lines pretty recently. I actually don't have the date on that. But, you know, they discover stuff before they actually tell us about it. So all I can tell you is it's a fairly recent discovery. So anyway, that is what they're saying they were for. Now, if you're going to build lines that you can only see from the air, I don't know. But that's what they say they're for. But it would be very interesting. And I have to go back to what Lavendar said about a year ago. All of these discoveries that are coming up in archaeology are just amazing. And in Stonehenge, there's new research. New research has shown that the landscape around Stonehenge has been continuously occupied for around 10,000 years. That's a long time.
Wow.
The findings came from a series of radiocarbon dates from a site 1.5 miles east of Stonehenge. And they say that the area, that means that the area had considerable political and probably religious significance for thousands of years, even before Stonehenge was built, so they say. Now, the earliest definitive evidence of human activity in this area, they say, dates around 8,000 B.C. And they say, but now a new series of 11 radiocarbon dates reveal that this area, a little bit closer to Stonehenge, was inhabited between 7,600 and 4,700 B.C. And they say that, there's ancient tombs and other monuments in the Stonehenge landscape that date through the Neolithic, Bronze Age, Iron Age, Anglo-Saxon, and later medieval periods. And they say that the nearby town of Amesbury has existed at least since 9 A.D. So they're excited about this find. They are drawing the conclusion that Stonehenge was maybe an area of great political or a place of leadership where people would gather, and had been that way over and over again through generations of time where people would gather. They say they found a lot of bones and shards and pottery pieces and signs of feasting. They found huge piles of animal bones and indicators of campfires and things, so they thought that was a place where people gathered to have feasts. I guess they found about 4,000 stone tools. So that was really a big find. And coming up really soon, I mean really, really soon, like maybe next week, bacterial robots are going to be put to work. They have an army of genetically engineered bacterial robots called Bactobots, and they're going to put those to work in some of Cincinnati's water supply so that they can clean the water and generate renewable energy at the same time, so they say. The project's goal is to determine how this new technology can be commercialized. Oh, we've got money at the root of this. But they want to commercialize it for use in wastewater plants and food and beverage companies and so on. Well, this is a pilot program, and during this pilot program in Cincinnati, the Bactobots will be placed in an electrogenic bioreactor or fuel cell. Now, wastewater is run through this fuel cell and is treated. The water is treated inside, and clean water emerges from one end of the reactor, and energy emerges from the other in the form of hydrogen gas. That's pretty wild. And at the laboratory, when they tested it, a mini reactor held 10 gallons of water, and they say that the Bactobots generated enough energy to charge a cell phone for 5 hours. Wow.
Wow.
That's the first I've heard of that, but that's pretty amazing. Well, here's a warning about BPA exposure. You know, we are also concerned about BPA exposure from plastic bottles and the plastic linings and the canned goods and so on. Well, a recent study has said that BPA comes from more than just eating and drinking from bottles and cans. They say that we get exposure to BPA from cash register receipts. Wow. Well, BPA happens to mimic estrogen in the body, and it's an endocrine system disruptor. And it's been linked to all kinds of diseases, obesity, diabetes, developmental problems, et cetera. And yet, you find it everywhere. And the FDA has set what they term safe exposure levels, but many scientists say there is no safe exposure level. Well, they did a study, and during this study, people that were participating consistently handled cash register receipts for 2 hours. The first time they did it barehanded, and then after a week-long washout period, they put on some gloves. Well, after 2 hours, they say that the participant's urine showed a significantly increased level of BPA. But what was more troubling to the researchers was that the second urine test conducted 8 hours, 8 hours after handling the receipts, showed a fivefold increase in BPA levels, meaning, of course, that their skin continued to absorb the chemical for as long as they handled the paper. Now, when the participants donned gloves, their urine showed no change in their BPA levels, meaning, of course, that they weren't absorbing the BPA in their skin from the receipts. And they also noted that the use of hand sanitizers increases the rate of absorption. And oils and moisturizers also increase the transfer of the BPA to the skin. You know, a lot of people have the habit of, after leaving the grocery store, handling the receipt, they're being very conscious about germs and so forth. They may use hand sanitizer once they get in the car, whatever. After you handle a receipt, according to this study, you don't want to use hand sanitizer, and you certainly don't want to have any oil or moisturizers on your skin. So they say that to limit your BPA exposure, you shouldn't take receipts whenever possible, that you should opt for an email copy. That's going to be a little hard to do for some people, but this is what they're saying. They're telling you to wash hands after handling a receipt, and again, don't use the gels or moisturizing lotions when you're out shopping. And they do suggest that people who are clerks, who handle receipts every day or constantly, who do this as an occupation, should wear gloves. And as they said, especially if they're pregnant or of childbearing age. So I don't know if a lot of employers are going to go for that, but that is the latest research about BPA. Very interesting. I would have never guessed that.
Wow.
Isn't that something? Yeah. Well, this
go ahead, go ahead and put it in the bag for me. I'm not touching it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, actually, the comments that followed this article indicated that people would do just that. They're just going to have people start dropping the sack, the receipt into the sack. You bet. Well, this is a fascinating study, everybody. Goodness sakes. The Fountain of Youth has maybe a surprising source. They've kind of come in close to finding this Fountain of Youth. And the Fountain of Youth, research indicates, may not be filled with water, but with blood. They have done three new studies that have discovered that the blood of young mice appears to reverse some or many of the effects of aging in older mice when the younger mice's blood has been put into the circulatory systems of the elderly mice. It was a fascinating study. It was very long. I'm abbreviating it for you here. Well, what they did was they combined the blood circulations of two mice by conjoining them, one old and the other young. And when they did that, they found dramatic improvements in the older mouse's muscle and brain. And after 4 weeks, stem cells in both those areas got increased activity and were better able to produce neurons and muscle tissue. And the study goes on and on and on with other organs in the body. So naturally, they are anticipating this may have some kind of use in human trials and human treatment. They say that it's no good to hope that we could get these benefits from blood transfusions, because when we get transfusions, there's no indication as to how old the person is when we get that blood. But they are actually thinking that reversing aging could be as simple as replacing older blood with younger blood. Now, one of the problems with that is it doesn't last too long. You know, it's just a matter of weeks, perhaps, that this benefit occurs, but who knows what they'll come up with next. I thought that was fascinating, which makes one think that perhaps then, of course, seems pretty obvious, is the source of aging really in our bloodstream? Is it in our blood crystals? Oh, my. Don't know. Well, I know a lot of you like Greek yogurt, and if you do, and if you eat it, you're really pretty smart. You really are. It's one of the fastest growing foods in the grocery market. Greek yogurt sales have just really increased, and people are starting to eat it now instead of regular milk yogurt. And they say that there are some specific health benefits of Greek yogurt. One is that it's really good for your digestion. It's got a lot of probiotics that promote a healthy gut, and it is effective against Crohn's disease and ulcerative colitis, so they say. Now, Greek yogurt also helps with blood pressure. They say that it is very beneficial in keeping that down. It actually lowers it. And they say that it's also helpful in weight management because it's, well, shall we say, carb effective. Greek yogurt is good for bone health because of the calcium. And it also, they also have written that it is good for lactose intolerant people because apparently the kind of yogurt that it is, it's not like regular milk yogurt. It doesn't cause you the same type of problems that other yogurt does for people that are lactose intolerant. Do you eat Greek yogurt, Ariel?
Well, you know, when you started that story, it's like, oh, no, don't tell me there's something wrong with it because I eat it every day.
You know, most people that I know that are really conscious and awake and watch their diets really eat that. And it really is so good for us. There have been so many studies out, you guys, about the intelligence of the gut and of our gastrointestinal and our digestive system, the brain inside, how much that affects our overall health, really how important healthy guts are to a healthy body. And that is something that we really need to be conscious of. Anything we can do to make our intestines healthy is going to help our immune system. It's actually going to help our thinking. It's going to help us in so many ways, help our immune systems. It is really critical to do that. So eat your yogurt, everybody, your Greek yogurt, I might say. So, well, I think that's about it for tonight's news, Ariel. It's going to be a good show. I'm looking forward to our guest, and especially to what you're going to tell us about manifestation, because we need good manifestation now more than ever.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I'm just, I'm so relieved that Greek yogurt is good for you. Because, I mean,
it's
I've
excellent.
Always got in the fridge, I've always got some.
Yeah.
I mean, virtually every single day. So good, yay.
Good for you. Well, you're a good example for what we should eat anyway. You know, Lavendar keep us on track.
Well,
we probably ought to do a show on natural health. We ought to do that sometime. Talk
that
about all this
great.
Stuff. Yeah, just remind everybody. Now, before I go, I just want to remind everybody listening, don't eat, drink diet drinks. Just stay away from the aspartame. Starseed, I know most of you are real good about that, but some of you just coming on board may still have that sort of tendency. Boy, the studies coming out about aspartame, I skipped one for tonight's show, but study after study after study indicates it's just pure, it's just deadly. So just don't do it. So drink water, eat Greek yogurt, and make good choices so you're going to be good starseed. Okay, I'm going to sign off.
All right, Anastasia, thank you so much. That was the starseed news for this week. So now, Lavendar, I'm going to open up your microphone, and I'm going to bring Jim on. Hang on just a second. Hello, Jim Gerard. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
Well, you're so welcome. Lavendar, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hey, great.
Yes,
welcome.
Jim, you sent me these three paragraphs, and I'd like to read them to our audience. You said,
okay.
I would outline my mission this way, to establish a solid reference point for others within the circle and describe their true spiritual identity. Each person has a magical name which comes through the readings. Their ancient memories come through the readings in the form of a matrix or blueprint. But these are not new blueprints. They are the original blueprints that have been there for eternity. In this way, most people who get readings from me experience an attunement or an alignment, which is a better way to describe it. Once this alignment happens, it hits them like a bolt of lightning. It happens the same day or a few days later or a few weeks later. And for one person in Arizona, it took one and a half years. The idea for the divination method I invented came from the Bible code. The problem with the Bible code was that the access to the random letters was not available to me. It was only available through the use of a CD program and a computer. I wanted to develop a method that would put the gift of the Bible code into my own hands and into the hands of others. It worked the very first time I tried it using regular dice. I later found Boggle dice from the Parker Brothers game, which have dice with letters on them. It took me 3 years and 1,500 to 2,000 readings to perfect the system. I have since developed a system which is quick and easy, and anyone who would like to can learn the system and do psychic readings without having any psychic abilities. For those who obtain the dice and wish to learn it one-on-one, they throw the dice and send me the random letters in an email. Then I decode the letters and send them the messages from the reading. For those who would rather learn the method in a group setting, there are group dice code meetings where I show them in person how it works and how to decode the letters and learn the language of inner vision. These group dice code meetings can be done through Skype if they live far away. I gave a talk on this method in Sedona, Arizona in 2012. 7 weeks before my talk, I did a reading to get the name of a person that I would meet when I gave the talk. I got the name Christy. When I gave my talk, I stepped out and said, "Is Christy here?" The person sitting directly in front of me was waving her hand and said, "I'm Christy." So when I returned home, I wrote a book on it called Dice Code Divination, and it's now published on Amazon. Well, good for you, Jim. I'm so excited to hear about this. So why don't we start, though, at the beginning, and just let me ask you, have you had any extraterrestrial or angelic high strangeness or things that have happened to you in your life to put you on the metaphysical path?
Oh, I'm glad you asked me that question. Yes, I had a night vision in 1970. I was 19 years old, and it's where the whole thing started for me with the dice code. It actually started there because I was visited by an angel. I saw the stars in the sky fall, which I found out later was a polar shift. And then I saw a building that had on top of it some changing letters that said BBWW, which changed into Beware the Antichrist. And that's when I realized that the messages from the astral heavenly planes were coming into human consciousness through the changing of letters.
Oh, okay. Go ahead.
I followed up on this vision for many, many years. I had a lot of questions and began searching and got into TM. I got into Hare Krishna books. I got into just everything I could find with these questions that were stimulated from this vision. And the one that stayed with me the most was the letters on top of the building, the changing letters. So when I found out about the Bible code, there was a group that was trying to prove that the Bible code was a hoax. So what they did was they took Moby Dick, and they ran a computer program into Moby Dick, and they asked some questions, and they got predictions and answers and all kinds of things. So their conclusion was that the Bible code was a hoax. But my conclusion wasn't that the Bible code was a hoax, but that if you had thousands of letters, you can get the message.
And tell us how that works exactly.
Well, the way the Bible code works is you need a computer and you need one of these CDs that they sell you. But it's extremely limited because you can only get certain answers to certain questions by running it through this computer code. But with the DICE method, you can get animated answers. In other words, you get expressions. You get, you find out the day, the week, the month, the year, the location, the country, the city, the event, the prediction, and the solution all in one reading.
So when people come to you, do they find you, do you have a website or do you have an email or a phone? How do people find you?
I have some things on Facebook right now. And there's a guy named X-Room Mod who's been doing some videos on YouTube, and he's kind of like experimenting and investigating paranormal stuff. And he's been posting my letters and my readings. And I've been getting a lot of response from that because he's telling them about me, and they get in touch with me, and I've been teaching people through that website.
Okay. You sent me some questions. It says, what is the most difficult part about learning this method, and how do you overcome those difficulties?
The thing that causes the biggest amount of problems is the mind. Because what happens is the knowledge and the inner vision that comes through these readings doesn't come through the mind. And when I send these readings out to people, they usually don't understand them. And so they ask me to interpret, and I can't always interpret. Sometimes I can, sometimes I can't. But when I can't, there's usually something in there that indicates a future event. And when that future event occurs, that's when they have an experience with the phenomenal energy, and that's when they understand everything. Because when the experience happens, then they remember what the reading said.
So let me get clear. So you have the dice there. So do people ask you questions, and then you throw the dice, and then the dice give you answers? Is that how it works?
I did that quite a bit for a couple of years. I did readings for people that requested readings. But the reason I did it was in hopes that some of them would develop the desire to learn the method itself. So I basically stopped doing readings for people in that sort of way. But what happens now is I throw the dice and I see a person's name in there, and I realize that that reading is for that person, so I send it to them.
Okay.
But what I'm focusing on is to teach the method itself.
And how long does that take to teach someone the method?
Depends on the person. Some people pick it up right away, that they have psychic ability, or they have the gift, they get it right away. I would say that the more linear thinking the person is, the longer it takes for them to learn it, because it doesn't come from the mind.
So you've published this book, and you can get it on Amazon, right?
Yes.
Okay. And it's called The Dice Code Divination?
Yes.
So those that are listening can go on Amazon and look up, I guess it's through your name also, right, Jim Girard?
Right.
Spells your
right.
Last name G-I-R-O-U-A-R-D. Also want
right.
to give your email address, and that's revelartist7@gmail.com. That's revelartist7@gmail.com.
Yeah.
So give us a little bit more information about some of the things that you've discovered with these dice. Do you have some interesting stories that you could relate to our audience? We have a pretty awake audience. Most of the people that listen to our show are awake already. They're metaphysicians, they're starseeds, and they're ready to pull up their sleeves and go to work for the planet. So,
oh, great.
Yeah. Give us some examples of your work.
Okay, one of the things that I've been able to do is to stop murders from happening in the future.
And how do you do that?
Well, these readings, the information comes in on its own. And there was this one reading that I got. At the time, I knew some people in Japan. I was talking to them on Skype, and they were devotees of Lord Shiva. And I got a reading that said on March 3rd of 2012 that 20 people would be gunned down by Uzis over a drug deal in Seattle, Washington. But then on the bottom it said, this can be stopped if you get in touch with some devotees of Lord Shiva and ask them to chant mantras to Lord Shiva. But for some reason, I didn't feel compelled to ask him to do that, and I didn't. But then the next day, I threw the dice again, and I got the word adjourned, which means it came to an end. In other words, these murders had been stopped by something, but I didn't know what, because it didn't say. All it said was adjourned. But then 5 minutes later after that reading, they called me on Skype, and the first thing they said was, "We just got done chanting some mantras to Lord Shiva."
Wow. So it was happening anyway.
It was prevented because the spectrum of time is so delicate that just by telling somebody something, it can prevent a future event.
Wow. Go ahead, tell us some more examples of this work.
Okay. You know, there's been a lot of stuff on the Internet about visitors from the future coming back to the present time in order to change things so that future timelines don't become destabilized.
Yes, I'm very familiar with several people that have, like John Tetzor and several others. Yeah, go ahead. I'm really interested in time travel. I want to hear this.
Okay, later on, I'm going to tell you how something that I did created the John Titor phenomena.
Oh, anyway, I want to hear that first.
Well, I sent a schematic called a sonic resonator to a guy named Steve Gibbs out in, at the time it was Nebraska, and he developed time machines. And then later on, the John Titor thing became developed as a result of this guy Steve Gibbs developing his first time machine that he developed as a result of me sending him the schematic.
That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, I'll tell you more about that later because there's really a lot to it. But I wanted to get back to this thing about preventing the future timelines from becoming destabilized. The question I asked when I threw the dice was, when are these visitors from the future going to come and visit me? So, you know, I had this great big Hollywood version in my mind that, you know, I was going to see these lights in the sky and have missing time and all kinds of stuff like that, you know. But instead, what I got was this reading that had instructions which said to get in touch with six people. And if I got in touch with these six people, that would prevent the future timeline from becoming destabilized. So what happened was I only got in touch with five of them. And the reason I didn't get in touch with the fifth person was because there was an A missing from her name. Her name was Marla. And all it said was M-A-R-L. So I didn't get in touch with Marla. And I kept doing these readings. And the readings kept saying that there was a hex energy in the form of a snake in the doorways of the portals, and that there was ascended masters, and there was you know, sorcerers and all kinds of evil entities mixed in with all these ascended masters. You know, there's all this kind of stuff going on. It seemed like nothing was changing. So then I got in touch with Marla, and as soon as I got in touch with Marla, I did another reading, and that one said, "Case closed."
And what do you think happened after? I mean, what was the result of that?
Well, I think the way it works is, let's say, for example, we're talking and we're engaged in activities during the day and we're doing all these things. The problem with that is we don't have like a window into the future to see the consequences of our thoughts and actions in the future. So there are these character flaws that we have and we make mistakes and there's all these little things that we do wrong. And, you know, those things accumulate through time. They magnify like a virus in a Petri dish. And on a collective level, they also magnify into the future. But we have no way of really being able to tell which behaviors that we're doing are right and which ones are wrong. So what I'm getting from these readings is sort of like that window into the future, which shows me where those junction points are of the character flaws and how to correct it. But basically all I have to do is just write them an email and just tell them just a little bit, and that changes everything.
You know, I'm really curious to know, for years we've been hearing about Edgar Cayce's predictions, and you're familiar with Edgar Cayce, right?
Right.
Yeah. So some of the timelines that he was referring to, Earth changes and, you know, the finding of Atlantis and you know, Mount Vesuvius and all those different predictions that he made, do you think those things can be changed?
Yeah, that's a good question, because if a prophet is truly successful, then he's successful because the timeline was changed. And the way it becomes changed is that this thought, the idea of going in a different direction, is thought of by many people. So if enough people start, if their thoughts start going in a different direction outside of the disaster, and they're going into the direction of, you know, peaceful, harmonious thoughts, then these major disasters can be stopped. But it takes someone like Edgar Cayce or Nostradamus, or someone that has a lot of following and has some success and some fame to do that.
One of the questions that you have here is, how do you create a time loop and exert your will and desire onto the future time stream to make events in the future happen according to your desire?
Right. Okay. The way that works is you start off with a desire, okay? And at the end, at the very end, is the end result, which is the manifestation of your desire. But in the middle part, that's the area that people skip over a lot of times. And what happens is, when you really manifest what you want, it's because when you get to the middle part, you stay there. It's like hovering. And what happens is you look at both sides. It could be this way, it could be that way, this way, that way, this way, that way. And what happens is there's like an oscillation effect, like a pendulum swinging back and forth and back and forth. And then what happens is it becomes more subtle. The pendulum starts to swing much more quickly. And then all of a sudden it reaches another level, and it's like a tuning fork. It's like ping. You hit the tuning fork, and it goes to another level. And then what happens is your desire gets catapulted right off to the end result. And then your desire manifests quickly and in a big way. And what most people are doing is they're rushing to the end. And it's like they're throwing a huge boulder into the water, and they're getting a big splash instead of taking a thin stone and, you know, skipping it over the water, you know, like kids do. You know, they go to the lake and they pick up these thin stones and they skip them over the water. Well, what's happening is most people are throwing boulders into the water, and they're skipping over the middle part. And then what happens is they come to the end result, it doesn't manifest, and then they become short-circuited, and then they get kicked back to the beginning of their desire, and they have to start all over again.
I'm not sure I'm following you, but I'm trying, okay?
Okay, here's where the time loop comes in. A time loop is something like, let's say we're talking on the phone like we are right now. Okay, what's happening is a time loop is being created because I'm expressing my ideas and you're expressing your ideas, and these ideas are going back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. Okay? That's a time loop right there. At a certain point in time, when the conversation has reached a peak and it's really moving, then you exert your desire into that time loop. Like two people might be talking back and forth, and one person has a car and the other one doesn't. And then one person happens to say, well, I need to go somewhere, but I don't have a car. Then the other person says, okay, well, I have a car. Maybe I can take you. And these time loops exist in every area of your life. I know you know about them already. Everybody knows about them. It's just that I call them time loops because I have all these definitions for these things that I teach in the DICE method.
So when people order your DICE code divination kit, do they get a booklet and the DICE with the letters? And tell us what they get when they order it.
They get the book, and then after they get in touch with me, they don't really need the DICE. I can show them how they can print out the letters on the printer and cut out the letters in a certain mathematical ratio. And they can do readings with letters that are on paper. And then when they can get the DICE later, they go get the Boggle DICE, and then they throw the DICE and then send me the letters in an email. And I decode them and then send them the reading.
Okay, so what if a person just wants to do it themselves and they don't need to call you? Can they do, I mean, is it self-explanatory for a person to learn to do by themselves, or do you have to be the one to decode it?
As far as I know, nobody else has figured out the DICE method, but there was a guy named Dan Martin out of Canada who was listening to the X-Room Mod videos on YouTube, and he got interested in my DICE code method, and he just instinctively wrote out the letters on paper and did a 600 letter code. And when I decoded his letter code, I found out that his letter code had a prediction of the death of a friend of mine's father.
Without asking for a question, you just got an answer like that?
Right. Like, I throw the dice all the time and don't ask questions, and I get the most incredible readings.
So can you throw the dice now and tell us something that we need to know about our Starseed radio show?
I do have a reading here that I did before we started talking.
Okay.
Yeah. I'll read this to you. It says, the DICE code oracle created bridges to connect the one dot for broadcasting healing energies. And it goes on to say that one dot is the email of questions he sent to Ariel. That one email dot begins the process of the broadcast science. Those broadcasted claims initiated enlightenment for the listeners.
Okay.
That's the reading that I got.
Okay.
There's a possibility that if somebody got in touch with me after the radio program, that it's quite possible that their first and last names are in that code.
Huh. So they can get in touch with you by your email, and that's revelartist7@gmail.com.
Yes.
The other question you have here, what is a magical name?
Okay, each person has a magical name that describes their true nature. And the way I do that is I look for all the types of words that go together in a descriptive manner that has something to do with the person I'm doing the reading for according to what I know about them. Like, for example, my magical name is the Egyptian Scryer of Magical Destiny.
And how do you know that?
Well, what I do is I identify people's spiritual identities for them.
Okay.
And, you know, I just identify so much with the Egyptian period of history. In fact, I was real interested in your videos when you were talking about the starseed thing there about, the numbers, the 26 and the 27 and all that. And, most of the people I do readings for have an ancient past life in Egypt.
Oh,
And I have a feeling that maybe I'm attracting them or they're attracting me in some way.
I see that happening. I think there are people that have, I call them beep beeps, and they beep, and this other person beeps, and then the beep beeps come together, and all of a sudden know that they're part of a soul group. Yeah, I've been identifying it that way.
Yeah, that's exactly the impression I got when I first started doing this, is this thing about the soul groups. And, you know, I was born on the eclipse of a full moon on September 15th, 1951.
Wow, you're loaded.
What's that mean?
It means you're loaded with all kinds of galactic information.
Well, I think so. I had a dream a couple nights of my spirit double.
When you say spirit double, are you talking about twin flame or soulmate or the other part of you, or what's your terminology for that?
Actually, you know what? I don't think it was a double. I think it was just me at the source, at the very source, because in this dream, I went up to the top of the hill and I saw this being, this light being. And it was a whitish-yellow color, and its name was Zara. And I had never heard that before, so I looked up Zara on the Internet, and I found that in the Hebrew language, Zara means light.
Okay.
And then I did a reading on it, and I found out from the reading that that this Zara character had something to do with the pyramid that was buried in Alaska.
Wow, I didn't know there was a pyramid buried in Alaska.
A pyramid that's larger than the Pyramid of Giza, and it's buried. Not only is it buried, but it's active, and it's causing airplanes to not work when they fly by. And but there's all kinds of stuff happening with that, and they've been trying to suppress the information.
Well, I knew that we had HAARP up there in Alaska. I didn't know we had a pyramid. I'll have to look into that. Wow.
Yeah, the Chinese did a geometric detection sort of a thing through the ground, which went towards Alaska, and then they found, you know, like a bleep or an anomaly on the screen, and then they tracked it down, and they saw there was a pyramid-shaped object.
Huh. That's interesting, very interesting.
Yeah, recent, very recent, too. It just happened within the past year or two.
Yeah. Well, I'm very interested in receiving. I'm going to take a look at this Dice Code Divination book, and I'm anxious to see how it works. So anyone that's listening, I guess it's okay for people to send an email to you, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
okay.
That's okay.
And you're on Facebook, right?
Yep, I'm on Facebook.
Okay, and the spelling of your name, last name is G-I-R-O-U-A-R-D, Jim Gerard, and your email is revelartist7@gmail.com, revelartist7@gmail.com. So I'm going to turn the show over now to Ariel, and if there's anyone that maybe wants to talk to you or email you, Ariel, what do you think is the best way for, since we have another addition to the show tonight, are we going to have enough time for him to answer some questions?
I think we will.
Okay.
Just if you do have a question for Jim, you need to press 1 on your keypad after the next part of our presentation. And interestingly enough, or is it synchronicity, The next presentation is about manifestation, and it really goes hand in hand with something that you were talking about earlier. So, Jim, if you want to just stay on the switchboard, and when we get done with this next little piece here, then we'll open up the switchboard for any questions. And is that okay with you?
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay. All right, then. So with that, I would like to present this little recording, and the timing of this is kind of tied to the emails that I've received for people that have wanted so much to come on the Crystal Quest, but they have financial struggles, and this is to help people not only with financial prosperity, but really to manifest anything that you desire. And this is called How to Manifest Prosperity.
Since I've been hearing the same thing from many of our Starseed family, I thought it was time to record a condensed crash course on how to manifest prosperity. Years ago, when I was a struggling, starving musician, I complained to Lavendar one day, "You can't light up the world if you can't pay your electric bill." I was half joking and half serious, but that observation had so many levels that it's kind of become a code for us. I understand all too well what it's like to make deals with utility companies and landlords and having to put things back at the grocery store. I didn't like having a PhD on survival, but I hated the thought of being part of the 40 hours a week corporate machine even more. Music has always been my passion, so I was constantly scrambling to find enough gigs to get through another month. Then two things happened within days of each other and changed all of that forever. A friend of mine had given me a cassette tape of Esther Hicks channeling Abraham's teachings on manifestation. There was something about it that was so clear, so succinctly put, that it resonated with me completely. I listened to it over and over again, trying to brainwash myself, but it wasn't until the second thing happened that it clicked. Many of you may be familiar with Abraham's teachings, but over the years, Esther and Jerry Hicks have done so many workshops with so much to offer that there may be some pieces you're missing if you find that you still have financial challenges. So my goal with this recording is to take all the bits and pieces that I've found to be very useful tools and exercises and put them all together in a nice, neat little package for you. And I'll add it to our vault of knowledge in MP3 form so you can listen to it over and over if you need to until that click happens to you. The basic and most important concept to understand is that we are all vibrational beings. I know this isn't news, but that's the basis. Every second of every day, your thoughts and emotions exist as a definable vibration with a specific frequency. In essence, you're a radio tower broadcasting nonstop to the universe. The law of attraction is always at work, always in motion, and so is the universe. If you want to understand the quantum physics of this, I suggest watching two movies called What the Bleep Do We Know and The Secret. The beauty of the law of attraction is that it is absolute. It's a universal constant. It works for everyone in the same way, for better or for worse, and you can count on it. The universe is always sending you a match for your emotional vibrational frequency. The key word here is emotional. It's the feeling you project that carries the power.
No.
You can make positive affirmations all day long, but if you still feel poor, you're wasting your time. You're not going to get ahead. Now, don't get me wrong, positive affirmations are very important, but only if you don't cancel them with your emotional state. The perfect illustration of this is the second thing that happened that week that really made it click for me. I've been listening to the tapes, trying to do the exercises and refine my manifestation skills, but it seemed like I wasn't doing something right. Then something happened, and I can remember it like it was yesterday. It was a Tuesday afternoon, and of course, musicians never work during the day, so I had gone to the barn to ride my horse, Avatar, who is the galactic horse that you may have heard about on our radio show. I owned his mother before him and took him out of the bag the night he was born, and I was and am committed to his care for the rest of his life. but it was a struggle to feed him and keep shoes on his feet, just the way, the same as any other child. So I often went without so I could feed him. I'm telling you this so you can understand my perception of reality at that time. I saddled him up with my third hand, English saddle and bridle, my leather chaps and gloves, which had been a Christmas present, and set off for my pleasure ride in the woods. And in order to get back to the barn, we had to walk alongside the road for about 50 yards, and in that short distance is when it happened. A really beat-up old car filled with Mexicans was passing by us. I glanced over because the car was making so much noise, and I made direct eye contact with one of them, and I could read her thoughts. Look at that rich American, not even working, on a Tuesday afternoon, horseback riding in that fancy outfit. As my consciousness melded with hers in that split second, I saw myself through her eyes, through her reality. I had a shot of adrenaline rush through my consciousness that dissolved my old concepts of my financial position in life. My first thought was, I must be rich because only rich people have horses, and I have a car that I don't have to share. You probably heard the saying that reality is only a matter of perception, but seeing it and commanding it are two different things. So let's get into commanding prosperity perception. Would you rather wish and hope for prosperity, or would you rather command it? There's a whole different frequency between hoping and deciding. Hope allows for failure, incompletion, and disappointment. Hoping also takes it out of your hands. Deciding to create gives the power to you. So the first thing you have to do is simply decide to create prosperity. The energy has shifted already. Now, these are some exercises that I've learned from Abraham's teachings over the years, plus a couple of techniques that I really don't remember where they came from, only that they work. The first thing you need to do is pay attention to your solar plexus, which is the chakra center in your stomach. It is your inner guidance telling you whether or not something is in alignment with your desires, or your mission for that matter. The next thing you have to do is decide what it is that you desire to create deliberately. The spoken word and the written word both have great power, and the written word helps bring it into the third dimension. So make a list and write it down, and be very, very specific. I know you're already starting to put those big things down on the list, as if you were a first-year piano student wanting to start with Beethoven's Ninth Symphony. But we have to start with something you don't have a huge emotional attachment to, because you have so much energy built up around the big things. You first have to prove to yourself that you can do it. Abraham teaches us to hold the pure vibration of what it is that you're wanting for 17 seconds. I started with feathers because I like feathers, and I don't have any emotional investment in attaining them. You can choose anything from your everyday environment. Some people choose blue glass. Others choose butterflies, particular birds, coins on the ground, good parking spots, anything, as long as you have no emotional investment in it, and it's a common object in your vicinity. The next step is finding the vibration of joy of having that object. The beauty of this part is that the universe doesn't know the difference between pretending, reminiscing, or actually having. All it knows is the vibrational frequency you transmit. Search your memory for any moment in your life where you felt such gratitude that it brought tears to your eyes. When you felt such joy that your stomach was tingling, that's the sensation that must accompany the image in your mind for a minimum of 17 seconds. You must hold that pure frequency. For 17 seconds, you have to be the joy of having that which you desire. Abraham says that 17 seconds of a pure frequency is equal to 200 man or woman hours of physical work towards that desire. A continuous 30 seconds would be 2,000 hours. 68 seconds would be 20,000 hours. You don't have to break your back and work yourself to the bone. You just need to find the frequency of joy and gratitude, hook it to that which you desire, and hold it for a minimum of 17 seconds. Don't allow any other thought into your mind or any other feeling into your heart while you are doing your 17 seconds. It has to be the pure vibration of gratitude for having that which you desire. It says in the Bible to pray for a thing as if you already have it and give thanks. After you've planted your first manifestational seed, the next step is allowing it to develop and grow and to come to you. You can't run outside the next day and dig up to see if it's sprouting roots. The moment you observe that it doesn't have roots yet, you've canceled yourself. But you can always start over. When you get into the car to go to the grocery store, you don't call ahead to make sure they're open. You absolutely know they're open and get in the car without any doubts. It's kind of like that. So now you've decided to manifest some common everyday thing as your first exercise. Like I said before, I chose feathers. I thought about how pretty they were and how they represented birds in flight and freedom, the pretty colors and how delicate they are. I thought of holding one in my hand, and I gave thanks from the core of my being for this precious thing. I called up so much gratitude that my eyes started welling up with tears of joy. A few days later, I was walking my dog, and I was barely out of my driveway when I looked down and saw a feather on the ground. My heart jumped when I saw it, and when I picked it up, I relived my 17 seconds, only this time with even more joy and gratitude. Every time I found a feather, and whenever I happened to think of it during the day, I did another 17 seconds for my feathers. Within a few weeks, I had to decide what to do with all these feathers, so I went and got a styrofoam ball and started sticking them in. Then I decided that I liked the blue jay feathers the best, and now my 17 seconds was all about blue jay feathers. I was just tickled when I started finding only blue jay feathers, and I was walking in the same neighborhood. So after my styrofoam ball didn't have any more room for feathers, I decided on butterflies because I wouldn't have to bring them back home. I used the exact same process, only now I focused on how much I love butterflies, and I hooked it with that emotion of gratitude. I started seeing butterflies wherever I went, and I was careful to allow them to be my butterflies. One fleeting thought of that butterfly would have been here anyway would have canceled my manifestation. Another thing I noticed is that attracting butterflies into my reality happened more quickly than the feathers, probably because I was getting better at holding the pure vibration for more than 17 seconds. I'll never forget the day I was walking my dog. I was no more than a block from my house when I noticed a few butterflies and I smiled. But by the time I reached the end of the block, I was being swarmed with dozens of butterflies all around me, and they followed me. By this time, I was giggling with gratitude. What next? Hummingbirds. That's it. Hummingbirds. So I went out and got a little hummingbird feeder and hung it outside where I could see it from inside the house. I did my 17 seconds, and I thought of seeing a hummingbird with joy in my heart, and I waited. After having such quick success with feathers and butterflies, I fully expected to see a hummingbird almost immediately. But every time I'd look out the window, there was no hummingbird. What I didn't realize at the time was that every time I observed they're not here yet, I was canceling myself. I tried for 2 months, and I kept canceling myself. I did it before, so where are my birds? When I realized I wasn't allowing hummingbirds into my reality by observing their absence, I decided to try something a little different. I went out to my hummingbird feeder and cupped my hands around it and did my 17 seconds or more and imagined how it would feel when I saw my first visitor to the feeder. When I walked back into the house, the phone rang, and before that conversation was over, I saw the most precious little hummingbird at my feeder. Again, the feeling of joy and gratitude in that moment is one I'll never forget. I have three more exercises to tell you about, but first I want to quote Abraham. Nothing is as important than that you feel good. When you catch yourself thinking a negative thought, it's the perfect opportunity to pivot that energy and think about something that makes you feel good. The goal is to be feeling good at least 55% of the time. The best way to accomplish that is through what Abraham calls segment intending. This is when you break your day down into small segments and only focus on the task at hand. For example, if you have to go to the grocery store, intend to have a safe and relaxing drive there. Find a great parking space and all the delicious food you'll be bringing home. Be grateful for having a car, for being able to walk through the grocery store, and being able to buy your food. Don't allow thoughts like, I only have a limited amount of money for food, because that's not the seed you want to plant. Each segment of your day is an opportunity to change your perception and therefore your reality. One of my favorite exercises is taking 50 $1 bills, folding them in half, and putting them in my top shirt pocket before I go to Walmart. When you fold them in half, it looks like a really big wad of money. I don't allow myself to think it's only $50. I keep looking down at my pocket, bulging with money, and thinking, I have a big wad of money in my pocket. I stroll through Walmart, just browsing through the aisles, looking at anything that catches my eye, and I say to myself, I could buy that if I wanted it. I just don't want it right now. When I make that statement, I go to my feeling of joy and gratitude, and as far as the universe is concerned, emotionally, I spent thousands of dollars that day. It doesn't matter that the $50 never came out of my pocket. It only matters that you transmitted the frequency of prosperity and allowed the universe to deliver your abundance, because it always gives you more of what you're focused on. Unexpected cash is a great seed to plant. So anytime you see a penny on the ground, pick it up and give 17 seconds of thanks for the unexpected cash. If you look at it and say, oh, it's only a penny, I'm not bending over. Energetically, you've told the universe that you don't want the money. Now, after you decide on what it is that you're wanting, make a list and write it down. Start with the smaller things, like the feathers or whatever you choose, and do your 17 seconds or more. When you see that thing come into your life, move on to the next. Then pay attention to the feeling in your solar plexus or stomach area. If it feels tight or uncomfortable, then what you are thinking or doing at that moment is not in alignment with your manifestational desires. It's the perfect opportunity to pivot that energy back to the frequency of abundance and gratitude. Starseed people carry a lot of power, and if you don't know how to focus it on what you want, you can bring more of what you don't want faster than non-starseed. Even though my focus here is on prosperity, this process works for health, careers, and even relationships. But I have to caution you that you must never interfere with anyone's free will. You can use it to attract a mate, but don't name any names, and be very, very, very specific with the qualities that you're seeking in a relationship. The next technique I call the magic checkbook. I happen to have an old batch of checks that had been misprinted, so I used them for this exercise, but when those were gone, I scanned one of my normal checks and made several copies. You don't really have to go through all that trouble, but the idea is to make it feel as real as possible. Do the same thing with your check register. The overall idea is to make imaginary deposits and write checks for everything you want to manifest. You can customize this to fit your own experience, but think about the most amount of money you've ever made in a day when you came home feeling victorious. You know how that feels because you've already seen it. That's the amount of money you should write as a deposit in your check register every day. Then start spending it, writing the checks for whatever you want, But don't think limiting thoughts like, I better save some. Just keep depositing and keep spending, feeling joy and gratitude with every check. Take all the checks you've written and put them in a little treasure box of some kind and keep it closed to hold the energy of unlimited abundance. It takes about 30 days to override past negativity and programming and replace it with the pure vibration of 17 seconds of gratitude for your abundance. I can't stress enough how powerful your words are. It's essential to police your thoughts and keep your transmitter on the frequency that's aligned with your desires, but it's absolutely imperative that you never utter words of shortage or lack to anyone. Don't give your attention to circumstances that you're trying to end. The law of attraction never sleeps, and the universe is always working to bring you what you're focused on. Remember that you are made in the image of the Creator, and even though you might be just a tiny spark of that source, you have the power to create the universe you live in, whether it's by default or by deliberate creation. Even more powerful than the spoken word is the written word. This last technique is called scripting or journaling. It's the diary of your future, however you wish it to unfold. Each day, just for a minute or two, write in your journal about a day you're having in the future. You're actually writing the script that you wish to experience. Always write in the present or past tense, because writing or saying things like I will, or someday, or my new job will be wonderful, that keeps it in the future and out of your present. Listen to the energy in these two statements. I'm going to be getting a wonderful new job, doing what I love, and I'm going to make a lot of money. I just got home from my first day at my new workplace, and I really loved the feeling of helping all those people. My coworkers were so supportive and kind, and I'm making twice as much money as I did before. I am so grateful to be living my dream. Always write your future script as if it's already happened, and describe how that makes you feel. So, just to sum up, practice your manifestation with objects that you have no emotional investment in attaining. Pick a moment from your past when you held the highest joy, the most gratitude, the most money, or the greatest happiness, and go to that frequency. Relive it with all your heart. As soon as you're there, bring the image into your mind of that which you have decided to attract, and hold that pure frequency for a minimum of 17 seconds. Then you must allow it to come, and know that it must come, because the law of attraction is absolute. Employ your segment intending as you go through your day to help you reset your thought patterns, giving focus to the gratitude you feel for all that you've been taking for granted. Get as many $1 bills as you can, and keep your pocket or your wallet or your change purse stuffed so that each time you look at it, you tell yourself, I've got a big wad of money. You can also keep it in a drawer so that anytime you want, you can go look at a big pile of money, never allowing the amount to enter your thoughts. Create your magic checkbook and make your deposits every day and continue to write checks. Don't let the money pile up. You need to keep the flow in and out. Police your thoughts and words for canceling and limiting energy at least 55% of the time, and start writing the script of your future. You might want to check out the Abraham Hicks website, which is Abraham-Hicks.com, and watch the movies The Secret and What the Bleep Do We Know. You have so much power, and you were born with so many gifts. It's like being born with a pair of six guns and a couple phasers and photon torpedoes and a sword too, but you're letting the third dimension beat you over the head with a stick. Suffering was not part of the deal here. So practice your manifestational skills until you can finally pay the light bill and light up the world.
Well, Lavendar, do you remember when I said that like 20-something years ago? Let me get Jim back on the line here. Okay. Lavendar, can you hear me? Hello?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay. For a minute there, I thought there was something wrong.
Yeah, well, I changed rooms. I'm in another phone.
Oh, I see. Looks like Jim fell off the switchboard, and we'll see if he is able to call back in. But that is our presentation for this evening, and if anyone has any questions about the manifestation, just let me know. Just press 1 on your keypad so that we know you want to come on the air. And in the absence of any questions, I will one more time want to remind everyone that we will be leaving for our Crystal Quest next week, so we won't be on the air next Tuesday or the following Tuesday. But on May 27th, I'll be back, and we will be on the air, even though Lavendar won't be back yet. And practice those manifestation techniques. If you do have the required star markings to participate in the Crystal Quest, those two things will work very well together. Lavendar, is there anything that you want to add before we wrap up?
No, I'm just, I really haven't heard that recording in a long time, and I'm so glad I got to hear it again. It's so right on. You were just so right on with the experiences that you had with manifestation, and I really applaud you for deciding to play it, you know, one more time, because we have a lot of clients and people that have not heard it before. I think you put that out, what, 2 or 3 years ago? I can't remember when you did that.
Yeah, it was 2011, actually.
Really? Okay, good.
But it is in the vault on our website. It's called How to Manifest Prosperity. And I really suggest brainwashing yourself with it. Listen to it, and that's what I did when I first got a hold of this material. I listened to it every time I got in the car. That's all I listened to, over and over and over again, until it really became a part of me. Because you, in the beginning, you have to be very present, and then it becomes automatic. It's just,
right.
It is magical. It truly
right.
is. And there's so many star seeds that are in jobs that they have outgrown, but they're not certain about the financial aspects of it. And we are living in the third dimension. It's not this is not about accumulation of wealth for its own purpose. It is about gaining the power to do and be what you want, who you are, and to be of better service to the planet, because your hands aren't tied by the third-dimensional realities of the economy.
Right.
So was
Jim able to call back in?
I don't see his number coming back up on the switchboard, so he may have had some problem getting back in. But we do have a caller coming on with a question, so I will hold off signing off until she comes out of or he comes out of the screening room. Claudia.
Okay, I'm going to go on mute now.
Oh, okay, that's fine. And I do want to say thank you to Claudia for manning the switchboard this evening, and for all of you that have listened to us over the years, we really appreciate that, and we hope that we've brought you information to bring more light into your life. And we do have a lot of new listeners, so I do encourage you, while we're off the air for the next 2 weeks, to go back into the archives, and any titles that stick out or seem attractive, go ahead and listen to that, because we have, I think, almost 200 shows, and most of them are close to 2 hours long. in the archives, and there's just a wealth of information that's very empowering for star seeds. So I'm still waiting for this caller to come out of the screening room to pick up the question before we sign off. Well, Lavendar, I know that you'll be gone for the next 3 weeks because you're going to stay behind in Arkansas, but I will be back for the show on the 27th. So I hope that you all tune back in again and have a great 2 weeks listening to the archives. So
I have something I'd like to say.
Okay.
I know that someone sent me that website about the earthquakes here in Oklahoma, and I think I told you this before, but I went to my insurance agent, and they won't sell me any earthquake insurance. They say earthquakes aren't going to happen here in Oklahoma. So I don't know when they're going to change that. I don't know whether I'm going to get earthquake insurance or not.
Well, you know, they're part of an established construct in the third dimension, and it's just beyond their reality because the numbers and the statistics were established, you know, before the Earth started changing, and certainly, you know, before December 2012.
Right. So much has happened since December of 2012. A lot of people, you know, they say, oh, well, nothing really happened with the Mayan calendar. Yeah, it did. It created a whole new timeline of energies for star seeds to stand up and be counted. And I'm noticing the fluctuation of energies that are happening from the star seed on the planet. More people are awake, more brain power is happening. And I know that we have some tough times ahead, but I really feel like our star seed people on the planet, they're going to make the difference in how the evolutionary moves go for these new kids that are coming, for sure.
Absolutely. And as I had mentioned a few weeks ago, when, you know, Anastasia points out places on the Earth that are having either volcanoes or earthquakes and things, that it's important that the star seeds focus that up spiral energy, light energy, to help stabilize and just to help the people that are in those areas that are affected, because
right.
We do have that collective consciousness that can make a huge difference. So our caller is out of the screening room now, so I'm going to... Okay, area code 406, you are on the air. Do you have a question for me?
Well, yeah, I guess, sorry, I already asked the other lady. I've never really been on before, so I'm kind of confused. But, yeah, I just got a starseed chart, and I was trying the manifesting. This is the second time I've listened to your the MP3. And I have crystal mastership, and I actually live in an area with a lot of crystals, so I've just been really trying to work with crystals and with manifesting. But I've only done it with Bluebird so far, which is working great. So now I'm going to try it with bigger things, and hopefully, I think I should be at the Crystal Quest in September. So, yeah.
Well, that would be great. Yeah, it's really important that you start with things that you really don't care about, you know, that you don't have that emotional investment with. And then as soon as you see that you really did do this and you realize that you do have that power, then you can start escalating to, you know, the bigger and bigger things. But there are so many star seeds that are taking and claiming their power to do this. And it's certainly with your crystal mastership, you know, crystals are amplifiers. So when you are feeling, when you're feeling joyous, when you're feeling gratitude, you can use the crystals to magnify that. And if you're having a difficult day, stay away from them because they'll pick that up too. So
that's what I read in the booklet. I was so interested by that.
It is. People make the mistake of thinking that crystals have some magical protection power, and they don't really. They're just magnifiers and amplifiers, and truly Lavendar is the crystal master of anyone I've ever known, and this is what she has taught me, as well as others through the little ebook, which she actually channeled from the Crystal Brotherhood. Lavendar, you say that you don't even really remember writing it, because you were just channeling. You were more the scribe to contain that information in booklet form. But I'm so glad that you got the book and put those techniques into service, and you'll get better and better and better. And before you know it, it'll be time for the next Crystal Quest, and I hope to see your name on that list.
Yeah, hopefully. I'm sure I'll be there in September. I'm not going to make it in May, but absolutely in September I'll be there.
Well, that's the next opening, because obviously the May is already full, and and September we've actually got a third of the quest spots already filled. So work on that manifestation, and we'll see you in Arkansas.
Can I ask one quick question about crystals?
Sure. Sure.
So do you guys know anything about Crystal Park and about Divide, Montana, or anything like that about the area I live in? I'm convinced that there's like some sort of new energy vortex or some new crystals that are supposed to be found. I'm just wondering if you guys know anything about that area. I Googled actually pyramids even in Montana, and I really think there's a pyramid here. I know that sounds weird, but like the guy said earlier about the buried pyramid in Alaska, like, I'm really convinced that something is here that hasn't been activated yet. I dig crystals a lot. Like, there's a huge crystal park, and I dig, like, hundreds of crystals.
Wow, and I am assuming that I did your confirmation for you, and you had the mark of the crystal grid or crystal mastership on your chart.
Yeah, I have 6 starseed markers, and you were, like, kind of amazed that I had that many. You said you hadn't seen that many in a really long time. So.
Oh, all about the crystal rites of passage. If you have that many markings, all you have to do is take off your shoes and stand barefoot on the ground and just clear your mind, and your body will resonate almost like a crystal divining or dowsing rod.
That's exactly what I do. I sungaze every morning and evening, but just all around my area. Like, I have quartz rocks everywhere. I have pyrite in my dirt. Usually I walk barefoot everywhere, and I stand barefoot twice a day outside. I'm going to get a reading from Lavendar, but I'm just really interested in my area because I dig so many crystals here, and you guys always talk about Arkansas. But I've never really heard you talk about other crystal places on the planet, especially this one. I'm kind of interested.
Well, certainly Arkansas is not the only place. It is the place that the Atlanteans chose, and because of the Atlantean connections, which if you have all 6 of the markings, you've got those too. But Lavendar, do you know about any other? I know there's in Colorado and other places, there are crystal veins. Arkansas is not exclusive like that. Do you know anything about?
Where do you live? I'm not sure I heard where she lives.
I live in southwest Montana, right outside of Butte, and it's called Divide. And there's a place called Crystal Park just a few miles from me. And so we go and we dig crystals there.
Familiar with it, but I'm glad to know that you're digging for crystals and that crystal veins are there, because the crystal grid inside the planet and it gets activated in all parts of the world at different times, and star seeds are just led to go there. It's just kind of a homing device for us. We just go to where the souls are.
Yeah, that's funny. It was the strangest coincidence, but I never lived here. I just moved here in 2006. And then I strangely got pregnant twice, live here. I was from the city. Now I just live out in this crazy wooded area full of crystals. And I love it, but I'm convinced that something's there. And so I'm digging away, hoping to find it.
Well, you keep it up. You keep it up because you're on the right track. I know you're tuned in, and you've got the rites of passage, and, you know, you might be the one that opens up that whole area in discovery for others to do the same.
Sweet. I hope so. I love it here. It's a great area.
Great. Well, we're so glad that you called in, and we will be looking for you in Arkansas and maybe in September. And what is your first name?
My first name is Laura.
Laura, okay. I'll remember that. Well, Laura, I want to thank you so much for calling in. It's been a pleasure talking to you, and you keep up the good work. And for everyone that's listening, I want to thank you so much for tuning in. And we will be on vacation, so to speak, for the next two Tuesdays, and the next show will be on May 27th. So until then, take care of yourselves and work on your manifestation. Have a great week, everybody. Have a great 2 weeks, and we'll talk to you when we get back from the quest. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Starseed Radio Academy. Visit our website at www.starseedhotline.com.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.